Welcome back to another episode of The Geek Whispers. This is Matt Brender.
And I'm Amy Lewis.
And I'm John Mark Troyer.
And we are welcoming Jeffrey Snover, a wonderful guest that I've been looking forward to speaking to. Jeffrey, would you mind introducing yourself to people and giving your title and where you are?
Sure. So I'm Jeffrey Snover. I'm a distinguished engineer at Microsoft, and I'm also the lead architect for Windows Server and for the System Center data center products.
Yeah, so just a few things going on in the Microsoft camp.
A few products you might have heard of every now and then.
He doesn't have any, you know. What is that again? Yeah.
It's a little niche.
When you go to cocktail parties, nobody ever goes, who or what?
Or they complain about the start button, something like that, probably.
Yeah. Oh, tell me about it.
Yeah, so why didn't those phones take off?
That's not us.
Okay, that aside, but we want to dig into something that is just, it's ever present today. We talk a lot about, in the tech world, we're talking about automation and all these interesting frameworks, and one of which that is just absolutely a big part of our community in the technology world is PowerShell. Jeffrey, could you tell us a little about your relationship to PowerShell?
Oh, sure. So basically, people attribute me to being the inventor of PowerShell. And at some level, that's certainly true. At another level, it's not true. I mean, well, you know, the team develops PowerShell, right? So it's definitely a team effort. But what happened was when I joined the Microsoft in, 1999, I came in saying, we need a command line interface. We need an interactive shell. And I originally tried to bring the Unix shells and products onto Windows. And that was just a complete failure because it didn't work at all. And because of the different architecture that Windows has. And so I ended up exploring a number of different ideas and came upon the core concepts of PowerShell. And I found a team that was interested in, or were actually funded to produce an alternate shell. And they were just looking to port K-shell to Windows. And I said, hey, I got an idea. Why don't we do it this way? And they looked at me like I had a rat's tail hanging out of my mouth, like, what? And so I tried to explain it and tried to explain it. And they're just like, I don't know what you're talking about. So I said, you know what? Just go away. I'll talk to you in a while. And so I just like sat down and I wrote like this, cranked out this like 10,000 line prototype that had all the core concepts that we now think of as PowerShell. It had namespaces, had the single common parser, had pipelines of objects, had ubiquitous wildcarding, et cetera. And said, okay, now let me explain what I'm showing. And they'd say, well, what about this? And I'd show them. And then it's like, oh, what about this? And I'd show them. And you could just see their eyes light up. And so it was just clear that was the best idea I had ever come up with and ever would. And so I decided that I would go work on that.
I love it. Yeah, and this is where I want to jump in, because as much as I enjoy PowerShell and I've used it myself, this is not going to be a show about PowerShell.
Yeah.
This is going to be a show about career identity, because you are attached, whether you meant to or not, whether you knew it at the time or not, your career destiny has been attached to this shell that is ubiquitous. And other Geek Whisperers, don't you find that just fascinating?
Yeah, no, it's a mixed blessing, honestly. It's great. You know, people have been so successful with PowerShell. And last year at TechEd, the number of people that just stopped me everywhere and wanted to shake my hand, thank me, and tell me their hero stories. I mean, that's the real point. It's about them. And what I've done is I've given them the tool that allows them to be their heroes. So many people told me stories like, oh, you know, I was a GUI guy, and then I started using this PowerShell, and then I was able to do this amazing thing, and I got this new job, or I saved us this much time. And I mean, people stop me at before and after my sessions. They stop me in restaurants. They stop me in the men's room to tell me their hero stories. I mean, it was just wonderful.
Well, actually, Jeffrey, I was going to fanboy on you a little bit. You know, coming from a VMware background, right? The people who made PowerCLI for VMware also like hit some sort of sweet spot of functionality, and it's been, of course, totally transformative for the VMware community. And I've been helping people with it for a long time, and I used to joke that I was a Perl and Shell script guy, but like this Windows stuff seemed really good. Anyway, that's me.
Yeah, no, they've got a great community. But so yeah, that's the great side. And then the downside is, you know, now I've been lead architect for Windows Server for, I'm pretty bad with years, but you know, over 3 years, and lead architect for Windows Server for, or sorry, System Center for a number of years as well. And yet people the engagement's always the PowerShell guy. So it's great, but I do a lot more now too.
Well, hey, so Jeffrey, now so is PowerShell going to be the thing on your gravestone, you think? And is that good or bad?
Yeah. Oh, I think it's great. Yeah, no.
It'll just be a single line, John.
PowerShell. Dash and a couple of arguments.
Well, now that said, come to Build and Ignite this year, and we're going to announce something else that I think might be a contender.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that was a good teaser.
That's nice.
Oh, no, I tell you, I'm really excited about this new thing we've been working on. You know, I can tell you a small amount about it. It's just basically a dramatic refactoring of the server to optimize it for the cloud. So can't give any more details than that, but yeah, I think that one might. No, it won't rival it, but it's going to be cool anyway.
Well, I want to just jump in and say one of the things that I think is neat about your story is so often in life and our careers, these things happen unexpectedly, that basically you had a problem you needed to solve. You were told no, and you said, go away, let me fix this. And you know, it set your career on a certain trajectory. What, besides being stopped in the men's room, which, you know, there's a point of privacy there. What else has it done? Has it been all positive and accolades, or have you found that identity? Yeah, so it's had some challenges there?
Well, from the very get-go. So basically, I thought, I'm going to go work with this team. At the time, I was the lead architect over all the managing products and technologies. And I thought, boy, this is a great opportunity. I'm going to go work with this team. And basically, I ended up taking a demotion to do that. Because they said, oh, you know, this is really important. The project these guys are working on is just this checkbox thing. You know, we hired you in as this big name, industry person. And to go work on something as small and unstrategic as this just doesn't make any sense. So, you know, we don't want you to do that. And if you do, we're going to demote you. And so I thought about it. And I said, well, you know what? This is the best thing I've ever thought of. I'm going to do it. And so I ended up taking a demotion. And, wow. You know. Yeah, it cost me a lot of money, like a lot of money. It took me 5 years to get my stripes back. So that was difficult. But, you know, I was working on great technology. And then at some point, if you remember Vista, right, Vista? Well, I'll say it this way, Longhorn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what had happened with Longhorn was the company, basically, it's one of these classic Microsoft over-pivots. Oh, .NET's cool. Let's put it in the kernel. You know, like, wait, no, that doesn't belong there. And so they screwed up a bunch of things, and then they flipped the bit. Oh, the problem isn't the project or people doing stupid things. The problem is .NET, .NET evil, .NET not in Windows. And so then they wanted me to, hey, get off .NET, do it in something else. I said, nah, this is the right technology. And they put me through basically 2 years of unbelievable pain and misery for having stuck with .NET. But ultimately, I prevailed, and it shipped, and it was successful. Again, I got my stripe back, and then after that, I got promoted to distinguished engineer. And then it turned out, oh, well, you know, it actually was a strategic thing. Oh, every now and again, people's hair's on fire, and you look like the bucket of water. Well, that's sort of what happened, right? Oh,
that's so interesting, right? Because sometimes you feel like you're falling, but in fact, you're actually finding a route up higher, which I think is a great story. John, I just feel like you have some wisdom to drop here.
Oh, more questions. So I'm curious, at the time, though, I'm guessing your peers probably also had some things to say or think about you, like, oh, maybe Jeffrey's not destined to be a technical leader. Maybe he's just a weird coder. Did you doubt yourself, and did it affect your relationship with your peer group?
That's a good question. No, I don't think so. Let's see. Yeah, the technical people all saw what I was
doing. Okay, good,
and
good.
They just like, this is fantastic. Go, go, go. It was really the kind of management chain that didn't see the value of it. So
I hate to be cynical and say they're easier to ignore, but sometimes.
Yes. And
disregard.
I never really doubted it. It really was the one thing that helped me, you know, get through all that was the, you know, clarity that this was just an incredibly powerful idea and would transform people's lives if I could get it out the door. Mm. So I had to get it out the door. And then, you know, early on, I mean, the question is, why would you put up with all that nonsense? And for me, you know, fundamentally, I'm an existentialist, right? Existentialists believe that at the end of life, that's it. There's nothing after that. So then the question is, well, what do you do with this life? And you get to choose. What what is meaning for you. And for me, I decided at the end of the day, I wanted to have, or at the end of my life, I wanted to have impact on the world. And so I looked at this and I said, boy, and it's one of the reasons why I came to Microsoft. So I was a, you know, big name at Tivoli, you know, I was a, you know, in the CTO office, and I was having a blast working with great people, working with great technology, having a big impact. But here's the question. Who's ever heard of Tivoli, right? Your friends use Tivoli, you know, TME 10, any of that?
I was just Googling it. I'm not going to lie.
Exactly. So when Microsoft called, you know, I was not a big fan of Microsoft. It's like, I don't think your software is very good. I don't think I want to work for Microsoft. And then they said, well, no, that's the point. It isn't. We need some help making it better. And if you do that and you're successful, then you can impact, you know, millions of people's lives, hundreds of millions of people's lives. And I love that. And I thought, wow, that is a good deal. Yeah, I'm in. So this opportunity to have an impact, you know, that is to say, if I can get it shipped in Windows and get it on every PC and on every server, that's going to have a huge impact. And that for me was the thing that kind of got me through the thick and thin of the difficult times.
Yeah, you saw the longer term benefit with the name, and the name was also part of the risk, right? Like if you weren't at Microsoft, you wouldn't have had that opportunity to be part of something that is such a brand name that everyone recognizes. That seemed to have been the light at the end of the tunnel that you were willing to kind of slog through as you dealt with the repercussions of your decisions. That's a really powerful story.
I'm really interested in this concept. A friend taught me when I went from a small company to a big company, she called it beware corporate whiplash, which I love that. So there really is such a massive shift between both the size of the company and the culture of the company. Jumping between, I did some time at IBM. It wildly different culture from Cisco, wildly different culture from SolidFire, wildly different from name any number of companies. How has that been for you? Have you gone to companies because of culture or size, or have you learned about it once you're there?
Yeah, mostly learned about it once I was there. So, you know, I started off and I was just a code monster, right? You know, give me a keyboard, turn out the lights, I'm code my brains out. And so I was just one of those people say, oh, you know, certain people are like, can write 10 times more code than other people. I was one of those guys. And then at Digital, you know, I did that at startup companies, et cetera. I was doing that at Digital. And then at some point, I had like a very bad case of repetitive strain injury. And so I went to, you know, physical therapy for like 6 months, and that didn't work. And finally they said, you know, you probably need to do a career where that doesn't involve a keyboard. I thought, well, that's not going to work. Anyway, so at that point, I realized I needed to shift from being the guy who wrote all the code to working with teams to get the teams to write, you know, the bulk of the code. And so that was kind of a big shift. Now then, but the point was, when it's just you and your keyboard, man, that's just a beautiful place to be. But there's only so much impact you can have. I really learned a lesson at Tivoli that really helped me deal with large organizations. Because, boy, you know, you mentioned corporate whiplash. You bet. You know, working at a big company is tough, tough, tough. Not so much tough. I mean, it's tough that why does it take so long? Do I really need all these people involved in this decision? That's sort of tough. And what happened to me at Tivoli was I worked for the CTO, and at some point he brought me in his office and he said, hey, Jeffrey, I need more output from you. I said, okay, I'm in. I'll just do more.
Wait, he said, no. That didn't even, you didn't even react, even though you said you're one of those 10X kind of people?
Yeah, no, I thought, okay, fine. You know,
okay.
But, no, I'm in. I've always, someone raises a flag, I salute it. I love these challenges.
Okay,
exactly.
All right.
So it's like, okay, I'm in. He says, no, you don't understand what I'm telling you. I said, okay, what do you mean? He says, you're already one of my smartest, hardest working guys. If I beat you, maybe I get 10, 15% more. He says, but then you'd burn out in 6 months and you'd be gone. I don't need 20% more output from you. I need 20 times more output from you. I said, what? He says, in fact, don't shoot for 20 times. Figure out how to give me 50 or 100 times more output than you're giving me. I said, Tom, I have no idea what the heck you're talking about. He says, I know. Go figure it out. I thought, what? And so then
wow.
I struggled. And you know, it's one of these Japanese koans, right?
Oh, like, boy.
What? Yeah. But I finally figured it out. What he said was basically, you know, impact is through other people, right? How do you influence the organization? How do you get more productivity out of the organization, not out of yourself? And so it was one of these transformational things. And so I stopped thinking in terms of I sit at a keyboard and I write code, but rather I architect systems, you know, coding systems, software systems, organizational systems that move the ball forward in the right direction. So, and that was one of the most impactful things I realized. And so basically now you go to, how does that relate to a big corporation? So now you go to a big corporation and you sit there in the meeting. It's like, if I could just write this damn code myself, you know, everyone go away. I could write the code myself. But it's not about writing that piece of code. It's how do I get everybody, right? Windows organization, there are thousands of people at Windows. How do I get thousands of people moving in the right direction, writing all the code the right way or the right mindset, the right culture, et cetera? So that different shift in perspective allowed me the patience to deal with some of the difficult changes in culture. Because I tell you, every now and again, I just need to like shut the door and write a bunch of code.
Well, and I love your description about the two mindsets you have about that. About, you know, I think everybody, many people who get in this industry have that DIY kind of ethic. But the challenge to recognize in yourself that the challenge is in a particular size or type of organization, exactly what you said. How do you not do it all yourself? That is really very powerful.
Also hard to remember that you can have a greater effect by scaling it through communications and dealing with the somewhat slow turn of a large organization. It's oxymoronic or at least counterintuitive to realize that going a little slower can actually get you much further.
Well, and it speaks to a little bit of my obsession with org charts, I think, because knowing the lay of the land and speaking that language, because I came in, again, from a very small company and going into a company the size of Cisco, it was literally like learning another language. And I think that's why I'm not a native speaker, and that may be why I'm fascinated with how it works as a system.
Well, you're certainly much better at PowerPoint than you used to be. having been through Cisco. But so Matt, notice that Jeffrey did not say he had to go build a huge organization or team, right? You talked about, so Jeffrey, you talked about organizational systems. Did you feel at all like you needed to go and become management?
So I was, in fact, at Digital. I was a manager at Digital, as in fact, a manager at Tivoli as well. And so I've done that, and I don't think that's a good fit for me. So now, you know, basically, people who do management should really love management. I love having impact, and they're very different. Mm. And so I am a very strong technical influencer of teams, but those teams don't have to report to me. When somebody's, you know, has problems with their schedule or stuff, that, you know, I'm not the best person to deal with that. Or they want to get from this level to that level, and why does that guy get more money than me? Like, don't talk to me about that stuff. You got a hard coding problem, got a hard design problem, let's talk about that. Or you want to talk strategy? That's the big difference at Microsoft, is we have these two tracks. Most companies do. There's the track for managers, and then there's the track for individual technical contributors. And long ago, I figured out that, you know, where my passion was in the technology and then influencing teams to drive a technology agenda.
Well, so Jeffrey, I'm also curious, in the course of your career, you've been through a couple of eras of how people communicate and how geeks communicate. And that's something that is near and dear to my heart. And, you know, now we're in this this social world, and you, I think at Microsoft, even in 99, had an interesting community, and it's only grown from there. And I don't know, at what point did you realize that maybe communication to geeks was going to be part of the gig? Was it at Tivoli and Digital or only later? And now how have you had to adapt to a world where you're not just at conferences or writing books or white papers? Now all of a sudden we're tweeting and you're doing a podcast right now, you know, in the evening, all this sort of extracurricular stuff.
Yeah, no, so I dialed that in, that communications at Digital. So basically what had happened is, so one of the things I do, or the things I sort of get paid for, is to look out at the world and then figure out, yeah, that's going to really matter. And so at Digital, I did that, and I looked around and I said, you know, these PCs are PCs, but wait a second, NT. NT's going to really matter. And so what I did was I started like banging the drums, going to talk into different groups, explaining the opportunity, why this was important. You know, people think, PCs, who matters? I'd say, yeah, if you thought the first 60 million PCs were a fluke, guess what? They're going to ship 80 million next year. And we're struggling to ship tens of thousands of workstations. So there's a real opportunity here. So, and then basically that was what, you know, it led me to being able to, you know, got a number of teams fired up doing NT work. I then led one of those teams and became a consulting engineer at Digital. So communications really kind of helped me make my first big breakthrough in my career. And then obviously at the, I did lots of user studies, lots of user groups, presentations, and the first ones of those were just terrible. You know, I mean, I was just a horrible speaker, you know, I'd forget to breathe and stuff. You know, guy up there about to pass out, turning blue. But, you know, I just did it. And then got more comfortable with it. And so now, anyway, so, you know, there's always been user groups. There's always been deep technical engagements with the customers, you know, go shadow them, have them come visit you, et cetera. But I got to say that the new world of social media, in particular Twitter, is just fantastic. Now, prior to coming to Microsoft, I mean, I really learned a lot at Microsoft. It's one of those, like, finishing experiences. You know, prior to coming to Microsoft, I was very defensive about my product. You tell me there's something wrong with my product, I tell you why it was actually you. You know, something wrong with you, my friend. And I would explain.
Yeah, I know people that react that way, yes.
I was totally one of those guys, totally. Well, Microsoft, the whole culture is around, you know, being brutal about your problems, focusing on your problems, focusing on your flaws, and fixing your flaws, both in the product and you and yourself. And that was very alien to me. But I really, at some point, I began to understand the wisdom of it, right? So we used to do these bill reviews, and it just beat the crap out of you, like, you are the stupidest person in the world. Like, oh my God. So then you go work on this. Finally, after about 2 years, I was walking into one of these reviews, and we had it nailed. I mean, we just had it nailed. And I knew this was going to be the review. He's going to just sit back and say, good job, Jeffrey. Anyway, we go and do this review, and he pays no attention to anything we're doing right and just beats us up about some brand new topic. And I remember thinking to myself, what a jerk. And then later I realized that the guy was a genius. He had the gift of dissatisfaction.
Oh, anyway, but right? That's so hard to hear over and over again. Or
oh, it's brutal.
Was that something that you wanted to beat out of your system?
No.
Then
not at all. He was brutal. There was one of these meetings. Okay, this is a tangent. It actually isn't a fun tangent at all, but you'll enjoy it. I didn't. So I went to, we were going to have one of these reviews, and I went in there, and it was some other guy's content, but I believed in it, so I'm pitching it. Anyway, he looks at the deck and just looks at the title and looks up as it's as though a bad Mexican meal had just hit his intestinal tract. You know, he got one of those looks on it. And then he's tearing into me right, left, and center. And so I calmly explain, well, here's why you're wrong. Let me explain how this works. And oh, my God. And so he's screaming at me for an hour and a half explaining how stupid I am, etc. And people were like, man, we were looking for a towel to throw in. Some guy said, you were like a weeble. He knocked you down. You just get back up and keep going. Honest to God, after that review, I went to the men's room and I almost puked. It was that bad.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, it was bad.
So you call that a tangent, but I want to take the moment to really emphasize this, that I think that there's a decent chunk of people who are technical that have this vision of expertise, and when you don't validate the expertise, they get angry, like just angry, like there's no processing of
anger or crushed, right? They can't, it kind of ruins your worldview, right?
Yeah well, you're right, it's either angry at themselves to a point of just being destroyed, or at the other person for how wrong they are. So I think it's worth highlighting, like, that is somehow part of the culture. What made you certain that wouldn't make you unemployed?
No, I didn't. I don't know. I just kept thinking to myself, my job's not to tell this guy what he wants to hear. My job's to tell him the truth. And he's wrong. And I got to explain it to him and do so respectfully. But my job's to make sure that the right thing happens here. So that's what I just held to. And boy, but I got to tell you, I failed, by the way.
Good. No, I wouldn't believe your story if you said you succeeded the first try. That's for sure. So no, I just admire you sharing that because I think it's the kind of story that people need to hear, like that you're going to be challenged and not just challenged in like a respectful, well, you could have done this a little better kind of way. Like some people are just going to rip you apart and you have to get used to it and be okay with it if it's the right project, if it's worth it.
Exactly. Well, but out of the where I was going with this was that I developed this appreciation for focusing in on your problems. And so now when we release a new version of the product, whenever I meet with people, I'm constantly asking them, hey, how are we doing? How can we do it better? Where are your problems? You know, where are you having issues? Where are we missing the ball? And being very open to hearing where our problems are. Because anytime anybody, and by the way, it turns out, you know, sometimes somebody will tweet something, you know, nasty. And I'll just follow up. I said, oh, I'd love to hear the details. Look, nice is optional. Details are not. So I don't care whether somebody's nasty or not. What I do care about is can they give me the details? So I'll follow up and I say, I'm really sorry you had a hard time with this. Could you please send me an email with all the details? And then I take that and people have gotten into very good details about where they're having problems with the product. And then I go take that to the team and I say, hey, let's go fix these things. So Twitter's been just a fantastic vehicle where I can, one, communicate some things that we want to do in a very lightweight way, but two, to broaden the engagement with people, find the flaws, and then engage and get the details.
It's great. It's great advice for anyone who's connected into a product, which basically means anyone in our industry.
Exactly.
It's important to remember that you can use this listening platform. So let's continue on into, you know, looking at the future, Jeffrey. So what does it mean to go from here where we have this hyper-connected social world and you have this new worldview personally? How would you advise listeners that are maybe stuck in a rut or maybe just in a process of discovering what technology they're passionate about? How do they invent themselves in this way that you found beneficial for you?
Yeah, you know, at the end of the day, there's no substitute. If you want to, it depends what you want out of your job, right? If you want a paycheck, great. You know, get a paycheck. There's lots of different ways to get a paycheck. But if you really want to have an impact on the world, there's really no substitute for passion. So find the thing that you're passionate about. Because guess what? There's going to be a hard time to get that, to have it be birthed, right? So you're going to run into guys like Bill who are just going to beat you up. You're going to run into organizations that say, hey, it's not valuable. You're going to run into technical problems. You're going to run into financial problems. You are going to run into problem. And the only thing that's going to keep you from quitting is passion. And so you really want to find something that you're passionate about so that you can invest to see it through the long term. You know, I like to tell a story about Navy SEALs, right? Somebody says, oh, well, you know, what does it take to be a Navy SEAL? And some people say, well, they're the world's best soldiers. And the answer is no, that's not right. The world's best soldiers, you have to be one of the world's best soldiers to apply. 9 out of 10 of those guys get washed out. So what does it take to be a Navy SEAL? And it turns out that their training camp, BUDS, is all about making people quit. And it turns out there's a certain type of person that no matter how much pain they're in, no matter how cold they are, no matter how humiliated they are, they'd rather die than quit. Well, it's the same sort of thing with significant technical products. I mean, you've got to have that passion about something because guess what? You're going to face a ton of people who don't believe in you. You're going to face a ton of adversity. And if you don't have that passion for the product, you know, you're just going to find so many opportunities to what the Navy SEALs call ring the bell. Say, I'm out. You know, enough of this crap. I'm going to go do something easier. So if you want to have something, you know, some real impact on the world, find the thing that you're passionate in and go all in. Got to take a demotion. Is it the right thing? Because, hey, you know, if it's not, it's just sort of a good idea. Yeah, don't take the demotion. But if it's the right idea, do whatever it took. I mean, that's basically what I told myself. I said, you know what? Screw them. as long as they don't fire me, I'm just going to view it this way. They're investing tens of millions of dollars in my ideas. So that's the deal. So as long as they don't fire me, I don't care.
You're winning. You're winning right there. That's enough said. I love it.
Exactly.
So any closing thoughts, Geek Whispers and Jeffrey? I feel like we've covered from PowerShell and how that is attached to your hip, Jeffrey, whether you loved it or hate it. Thankfully, you love it.
But we've
gone all the way to kind of, realizing that your culture is a big effect on your career as you jump around different companies. So any closing thoughts?
So Jeffrey, in your role with Windows Server and associated technologies, how are you looking at the future of IT? I sometimes get a lot of doom and gloom. I love some of the DevOps movements. I think that is definitely the right direction. Sometimes we get visions of the future where it's just a giant dark factory and there's one person working there. Other times, where there's visions where we're all going to have interesting jobs because all the boring jobs will be taken by others. I don't know. Are you bullish on IT and our future world where we all have interesting jobs instead of pulling cable and racking?
Yes. I'm extremely bullish on IT. I do not buy into this subscription. Look, you're talking to Mr. Automation, and I don't believe in a world where there are no people. I believe that in a world where you're going to be very productively engaged, there's lots of hard problems. There's lots of problems for people to solve. I'm extremely excited by the DevOps revolution. Now, here's the thing. If you're sitting there, like a number of IT people I deal with don't want to invest in their careers. It's like, hey, I had that when I was young. I learned this. I know how to do this stuff. And do I really have to learn something new? And the answer is, yeah, you do. If you don't want to learn anything new, don't pick IT as a career. One of my best friends is in lumber. Like, that's the career you want. Like, when was the last time they came out with a new tree? Right? So you learn. No, that's in IT, you have to constantly be learning, and you will have to learn. There are going to be dramatic changes. People will not be doing their IT jobs 5 years from now the same way they did 5 years ago. It is going to be dramatically different. You are going to have to learn new skills. But here's the deal. Guys, remember, it's fun. I mean, I got to tell you, one of the things, the great thing about PowerShell, at some point, we look back and we realize that computing had stopped being fun. And computing had always been fun. It was just a blast. I mean, I just remember, I couldn't believe people were actually paying me money to program computers. It's like, this is crazy. I would pay them money, but they're actually paying me money to program computers. It was just so much fun. And then at some point, it stopped being fun. When we built PowerShell, all of a sudden we found ourselves running into each other's office. Hey, check this out. Look what I can do. Look what I can do. Look what I can do. And I realized that when you're just sitting around clicking the mouse, it took all the fun out of it. Anyway, so it's going to be fun. Learn, invest in your careers. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a blast. There's some amazing technologies coming out. You want to invest. So, and if you don't, quit IT, go be a golf instructor or learn lumber.
valid conclusion.
You can always dig ditches. Nothing ever changes.
You can always dig ditches. That's good. I like that. I'm going to steal that.
Hey, I think we've covered quite a wide breadth of knowledge. So just as a natural follow-up, I'm sure people are going to want to hear more from you, Jeffrey. So where can they find you online?
Oh, well, my Twitter tag is at jsnover, J-S-N-O-V as in victory, E-R. And I've got a website which I haven't updated, a bunch of old blogs that I haven't updated in a while, but that's at jsnover.com. I talked about kind of some career stuff. People like have enjoyed some of those.
Yeah, and now you can link to this and write up a little after it. So, Jeffrey, I think this was an incredible conversation. Thank you so much. And with that, we will close another episode of The Geek Whisperers.
You've been listening to The Geek Whisperers podcast, where we bring social media and community to enterprise IT. You can listen to all the episodes at our website, geek-whisperers.com, or check us out on Twitter, Facebook, or iTunes. Your hosts were John Mark Troyer, Amy Lewis, and Matthew Brender. better known on Twitter as Jay Troyer, Comms Ninja, and MJ Brender. See you next week.
Amy, sing something.
It's an automated world after all.
Oh, my Lord.
That was so perfect.
Words are so very...
Are you trying to go to...